Well, welcome to our seminar this evening on overcoming depression. I was thinking about this seminar and thinking about depression and all the different aspects of depression. And it turns out that there's quite a lot of different aspects involved with depression. And Barbara and I sat down together today and talked about some of them. I'd like to kind of see what you think. In terms of depression, when you think of depression, what do you think that is? Despair.
I think when you're sad for a long amount of time.
When you're sad for a long amount of time.
But I don't think I'm depressed in a day. I think if I'm still sad about the same thing, or I don't know what I'm sad about for more than a few days, then I think, God, I'm depressed.
Okay. And that you can't get yourself out of it.
Right.
So it's got you.
Hopeless, yeah.
So there's a hope. Okay. Hopeless.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was looking what Mr. Webster had to say about depression, and there's a number of different kinds of definitions, but the kind that basically fits the program that we have tonight was a psychoneurotic or psychotic disorder marked by sadness, inactivity, difficulty of thinking and concentration, and a feeling of dejection. Like a negative emotion. It's not really emotion, but it's equated with sadness and hopelessness. So, as we were looking at depression, the title of the seminar is Overcoming Depression. So first we had to really examine what it really is. And so we broke it down into the four categories of mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally, and what depression would be in each one of those categories. So what is depression physically?
Tiredness.
Inactivity.
Body's run down.
Heaviness.
The body's not electrically charged. It just gets very, very run down.
Okay, so it's physically run down. What else?
Sleep a lot.
Need a lot of sleep, so you're really tired. How about a hormonal imbalance?
I know that
one. You have a hormonal depletion at that point.
Hormonal imbalance?
Hormonal depletion at that point.
So, your adrenal glands are stressed out.
Stressed out.
The body isn't behaving in the way it's supposed to be.
Okay. Which causes mood swings.
Yes.
Tendency to eat or overeat or overdrink.
An interesting thing is in reading about depression, they say one of the things that people do to depress is that they eat more fats, which makes them even further depressed. There's actually a brain response to that.
You actually want fats?
You want fats when you're depressed, which makes you even further depressed.
Mm-hmm. So these are all physical responses to depression. What about the way that we hold our body? Okay, there's kind of a slumped over feeling or movement in our body, a heaviness in our walk. We're in the water. We're heavy in the water. There's a specific way that we hold our facial muscles when we're depressed, so that people looking at us can tell that there's something going on. They can tell that we're having some problems by just looking at us. Any one of those postures can lead us right into experiencing depression. If we get tired, it's very easy then to trigger into depression. If we have physical stress, we're holding our body hunched over, that can lead us into depression. So at the physical aspect, we can start to see the impact that depression is having on us. But what about at the mental? What are some of the causes of depression mentally? When does your mind talk to you the most? How about when you're trying to go to sleep? Does it ever talk to you just before you get ready to go to sleep?
Mine usually talks to me when I wake up.
Well, yours is when you wake up in the morning.
Yeah, mine's when I wake up.
Mine's all night. If I wake up, something's bothering me, my mind will chatter. I can't go back to sleep.
Okay. So the mind takes off and starts running, and it's usually about what?
Anything that's not working that day before.
Anything that's not working. Anything that didn't turn out the way you wanted it to.
It's true. It's good stuff. You don't really think that into it.
And it's at a point in time where you can't do anything about it.
Yeah, that's frustrating.
To resolve it. So your mind takes off with it and starts running and having this whole conversation. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, if I'da. But there isn't a thing that you can do about it at the time. So it produces insomnia. And there's an exhaustion that happens because there's an energy drain that goes along with the whole conversation. Generally, we're making somebody wrong or something wrong. So really, it makes you irrational and generally fearful.
Yeah, because, you know, when you get up the next morning, it's not half as bad. So at nighttime seems to feel more intense and more intense.
Right. So when you can step back away from it, it's really not as bad as it appears to be when our mind takes off and runs with whatever that issue is. And it seems to us as if we cannot stop our mind from doing it, like it's running us. That's not the reality. It's irrational to think that our mind can just do something to us and keep running like that. But we're allowing it to. So that produces what? What does your mind produce internally when it's having these conversations? It produces emotions. What kind of emotions occur for you? Anger, sadness, grief.
See, for me, Glenn, I think the thing that happens for me is that and it's mental and emotional collapse. Is I'm usually feeling very angry, and I'm feeling very cut off with my connection with the people I love or I care about. So I can have very hostile thoughts towards them or towards myself. And it's something I've been battling with Jonathan. We have a new reality now called Jonathan in the morning. So I can't connect with Nancy in the morning because Jonathan's there. So I start my day in a different way than I ever have before. And sometimes I can pull myself out of it by reminding my connection with Jonathan and Nancy. But it's a very, very different reality than the one I've been in for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
When we had this big upset with the tree in the house this week, it seems like the most frustrating or depressing part is I've been trying to, and I know it's not about Nancy, but at another level, I've been trying to get close and connected to her. But my survival machinery is so intact that I'm trying to fight to get in control. And I have a feeling of being, or thoughts about being out of control, or a feeling of being out of control. And then even as I communicate to Nancy that I'm in some way trying to reach out to her, what I actually ended up producing is throwing a lot of angry feelings and thoughts and words at her, which is the very opposite of what I would want to do.
So there's a sense of hopelessness that you have in gaining control again.
Yes, absolutely. A sense of resignation about that.
So then there's frustration.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then what happens, that frustration is, this is the first time in ages for me that there's been a really strong death urge or very strong self-destructive thoughts, feeling urges really came up with real intensity ever since the tree.
I don't think so. I think if that death urge was strong, you'd have been sitting at your desk when that tree came down. The fact that you weren't shows that you weren't anywhere in your death urge. Now you're turning it into drama. You made the newspaper, you got your friends all enrolled, everybody's on edge how to help you or support you. Are you doing all right? So, I mean, it's turned into a monumental event in your life. So you have the circumstance of a tree falling, and then you have the way that you're dealing with it. And is it causing you depression?
I understand what you're saying, Lynn, about calling, turning it into drama, but I just, this to me is the exception to the rule. I really feel in my heart, I don't live my life out of a huge amount of trauma. I really felt like this knocked us harder than anything I can remember, one singular event. And there was, for me, it's like, today I finally took some action. I realized that, yes, I was wallowing in it. I was staying around in a house that is topsy-turvy instead of acting on it when people were saying, well, we're here, and I didn't take them up on it.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that there was a wallowing in there, but I tried to reassure the people that are reaching out that we're okay.
Right. I understand that.
Except that the emotional part of me at some point says, well, this is a lot. You know, I don't really write the second. I don't feel good inside of all of this.
Right.
I feel very sad and very upset that our world has been turned upside down.
Okay.
So, I guess the part of me with our conversation, Glenn, that I felt in some way that the emotional reactions and the thoughts and stuff and patterns have been justified given the magnitude of what transpired.
Well, that's the point. You think it's justified, so you act it out that way because you think it's justified. Mm-hmm. That's not the way you were that day. When your family was safe and everything turned out okay, the gas got turned out, there was no fire, everything was okay, you were fine. You were light, you could joke about it, you were in gratitude that you all came through it so well. But somewhere along the way you changed your attitude. Your mind kicked in, and now it's leading you towards depression. And there was inactivity. Now you're starting to come back out of it by taking action, which is one of the ways that you overcome depression. So I'm not looking to attack you or to have you defend yourself. I'm trying to point out that there was a shift in you from when it first occurred and you were in the gratitude about everyone being safe and alive, to now where there's this whole other
something.
Ground of being or way of being with. See, the circumstance is the same circumstance.
Right, but now I've re-enrolled different.
Well, what happened is What happened for me is we lived, starting to live in the circumstances was what got me going. Having no hot water, you know, having to live in that is what got me going. I was fine. I almost like partied with Barbara all weekend. I was like high as a kite. I was having a ball. It was like the old time, you know?
Yeah.
And then I got home. And I started getting upset when I got home.
What the point is that the depression, the upset leads to the depression, which leads to inactivity, exhaustion, physical illness, that downward spiral. You didn't have to go in that direction. It could have been in gratitude, continuing in gratitude, and looking to see what you're going to create now, newly, out of the circumstance. Looking for the value in the circumstance, which would have kept you from bickering with each other and getting into deeper and deeper upset. So there's a circumstance, and then there's a way that you deal with a circumstance. Now, part of it, and we haven't really talked about it yet, is what happens to the spiritual connection when we get depressed. There's a loss of our connection with God when there's an event like this, and when we start going into depression, we lose our connection with God. We begin to question if there is a God in some cases, or we begin to blame God for how the circumstance is going, and then we gather evidence to be right about it, so that it takes us further and further away from our grounded connection with God. So spiritually, we're way out of balance. In order to be depressed, we have to be way out of balance spiritually.
I want to also say two more if I may, Glenn. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I've really gotten aware this year with you and Barbara about how much I have to manage my rage, especially with people that I love, you, Nancy, you, and Barbara. That's one of my big goals for this year, is to really learn how to manage and get out of the way of that. So I really...
Rage is unmanageable. Anger is manageable. Rage is unmanaged anger, is uncontrolled anger. So you can't manage rage. Best thing is to manage your anger before it gets to rage. We were talking about that Sunday, in the one day. So you've got to manage the anger and the decisions around it prior to getting into rage.
I just want to restate my commitment to managing my anger.
Okay.
And take a really strong stand that I eliminate hurting myself and the people that I love with my anger. That I refuse to do that.
Okay.
It's just important to say that.
But if you're going into depression because of the circumstances, you're losing your connection with God. You're losing your connection with any spiritual foundation that you have, or religious, or however you practice your worship. So you're losing that connection. You feel alone, even when there's people around. You still feel alone. The tendency is to invalidate yourself. Your self-esteem goes way down. Feel worthless and hopeless, and the low self-esteem kicks in. All because of a circumstance. And the circumstance is the circumstance, and it doesn't change. So one way to manage it is to go into depression and feel sorry for yourself, and your mind kicks in and shoulda, woulda, couldas, and, you know, trim the tree, get the people out to check it, why didn't we, you know, all that stuff. That conversation leads to the emotionality that occurs, whether it's the adrenaline flow, whether it's anger, whether it's sadness, all of that.
Feeling dejected
and frustrated.
Now, what put things back in for us today was our conversation with both of you last night, where you reminded us about calling forth our integrity. And integrity is what allows God to work in our lives.
Absolutely.
When we got that depressed, then we started, I started energizing the negative, the out integrity things to get through, as if I were going to do a better job than God was going to do with the set of circumstances. And it was clearly a lie in that all the people around us are reaching out to give us their support, and we can feel the pleasant presence of God around us, and yet here I am energizing the very opposite.
Get something for nothing, kind of.
From what's happened. So when we put our integrity back in and worked on that today, then we were able to call forth God and God to come back.
So the circumstance is being resolved in a smoother fashion.
As soon as things started getting handled, we got in good shape. We actually switched out real 7 to 5.
But I think you shifted before, and then the things started working out. When you, like you said in that conversation yesterday, you shifted back to who you are, got back out of the depression. See, when there's depression, you lose your memory, and you can't think straight. Yeah, that's an aspect of depression, though, is that you lose your memory. We had one lady who was so into her depression, she would get in her car to go to work, and she'd forget. On the way to work, she'd forget whether she was going to work or she was going to the grocery store. She literally had to look at the clock on the car to find out what time it was and then stop and think, okay, now what do I do at this time? Now, is it 5 o'clock? Is it 5 o'clock in the morning, or is it 5 o'clock in the evening? Well, it's really light out. It must be 5 o'clock in the evening. I mean, she was so, had gone to that depth of the depression.